I'd like to call the meeting of the Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors to order tonight, and I would like to do that remembering that there was a tragedy here in our town this week, and we are all responsible for actions, and I just want to use this time just to make a comment with regards to suicide and suicide awareness. And I think we all need to be aware of that. We all need to be aware that that our words cause actions, and I just want to remember the young man. Thank you. With that, I would ask that we stand and have the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present.
This is the time for public comments. If anybody in the audience would like to make public comments, this would be the time to come to the podium. You have a 3-minute time limit, and it is for any items that are not on the agenda. And I'm going to take a risk here and say that there's probably nobody coming forward, because I don't see anybody in the audience. With that, I'd like to move to the consent calendar, please.
Move approval.
Second.
Any discussion? Any public comment? Not hearing any. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Area agency reports, I do not. We will put that on hold for the time being in case the chief shows up or one of his representatives. And then I'd like to move forward with presentations. I have an honor enough to make a presentation here, and I would ask if Director Lee would meet me in front of the podium. For your fantastic efforts at, and your success at being the board president for the last year, I'd like to present you with this honorary gavel.
Right,
yes, it is.
Take it out of his wrapper.
A little bit.
And thanks for the board for making this easy, and thanks for the staff. We've had a great year.
Lots of here if you want it. Thank you. We have another presentation tonight, and as soon as I get to, we have a presentation, I believe, by Gregory Harris. Is that correct tonight with regards to the wastewater plant number 2 update?
President Graves, I saw that the chief is here. Did you want to take him now so we can get back back to his duties?
I will
sorry, Greg.
Move back to item D. If we could get a report from the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District, that would be great.
Good evening. Sorry I'm a couple minutes late.
It's okay.
First, I'll give you a breakdown on the district, what's going on. As of December, there were 62 calls in Discovery Bay for the month of December. Average response time was 10 minutes and 14 seconds. There were no major incidents in December. However, I haven't got the full January numbers, but as we know, we've had 2 structure fires in Discovery Bay since January 1st. One was a total loss. The other was just 2 days ago, suffered significant damage. The first structure fire is still being actively investigated to see what the cause was. We have some general ideas. The second one, I don't have that information yet, so they're still working on that. other than that, the district ran a total 732 calls for the month of December with an average response time of 8 minutes and 10 seconds. That included 5 structure fires, 1 commercial fire, 7 vehicle fires, 3 large vehicle fires, and we had 5 vegetation fires in December, which was because of the weather was still dry. Now it's finally, the moisture's come, getting some rain, so now we're pretty much done with that until next wildland season. We also assisted Con Fire on December 21st with 5 simultaneous structure fires in downtown Antioch. We sent 2 engines and a battalion chief to assist them. They had an arsonist in the area that started a lot of fires, made the news, so I'm sure everybody saw that. Some early numbers, last year total, we're still vetting those out. We ran about 7,500 calls for the year for the district. And that is an 11% increase from the year before, so we're starting to see a significant uptick in calls. Since the last time I was here, you guys knew about the strike team that went down. Just a little update on that. They were invited to Ellen DeGeneres' house. So that was a little interesting tidbit. So one of our members on the strike team actually got to go to her house. She invited our whole team over because they protected her neighborhood. Awesome. And as of today, they actually did a live stream from San Ramon Valley Fire where our members went over there and participated in that. So just one of those little fun things I wanted to throw out there. As we're still on for March 10th for our open house at Station 59 down the street. That'll be from 10 to 1, and that is a hard date and a go. We are going to start advertising that early February. On that note, as of yesterday, our agency is finally on Nextdoor. So we will start sending out invites here soon. We're working on dialing out our page with the right pictures and things of that sort, right information. And within the next 2 to 3 days, you should start seeing that roll out. So if you're a member of Nextdoor, anybody in the crowds here, member of Nextdoor, we have our own page and we'll be able to communicate as such from there. Other than that, please visit our websites and our social media pages. We're still doing some stuff there, and that's my report for tonight. And I do have one thing for you. I did get your email the other day about some reason you're not getting emails again from our district. When I get to work tomorrow, I'll send you a couple test ones like we did before and see if for some reason servers are being goofy again. We're also working on some other means of getting mass emails out to people who subscribe for major incidents and things. We're looking at a couple of other programs here. So hopefully in the next 2 months, we don't have this problem anymore. So
thank you very much. Any questions from the audience, from the public? Any questions from the directors?
Chief, the uptick in calls that you had, was it vegetation fires, structure fires, medical?
It's kind of everything. It's all across the road. Like I said, we're still vetting out all the full numbers, but we do know we have about an 11% increase. Okay. So we don't know if it's just one particular call overall yet. We don't even know why. I mean, we expect our call line to go up every year. This one was a significant jump from years past. So we don't know if it's going to be an anomaly or if it's going to be normal.
Okay. And thank you. I have one. There was an activity on the last meeting that you recognized a lot of the people that gave help.
Oh, yes. Say something about that. We did. Our fire board meeting on the 8th, we were able to recognize a lot of businesses and individual citizens who helped deliver goods and raise money for the North Bay fires. If any of you were able to at least watch our fire board meeting on live stream, that actually went really well. A lot of people who we invited showed up. We presented each of them certificates of appreciation from the fire district, saying that, you know, thank you for helping those in need. We were able to take group pictures, and actually it went really well. So it was a nice thing to have.
Done well, yeah.
Any other comments from the board? Thank you very much for your report.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing you again. Thanks. Okay. Now we will go to E2, wastewater plant 2 update. Staff?
Yes, I'll invite Gregory up to give you an update on our plant 2.
Yeah, so the owner manual is like later, I think. This is the
update.
That's correct.
So Gregory Harris, Rivers Engineering, and Bernie can come up for this also. We wanted to give you an update on some of the operations of the filtration system that's recently been installed at Plant 2. You may or may not have heard that we've had some problems in December. So I wanted to update you, and Bernie can update you on what's going on.
Actually, the issue started January 1st.
Oh, yes.
December was fine. December 1st, we came in to work after the holiday, and we had a total algae bloom on the whole facility. The lagoons were blooming. We had algae through our treatment facility on our clarifiers and our oxygen and all our lagoons. And algae is very toxic to our system, and the filters will not filter algae. So we've been fighting that issue for a couple of weeks. We had to wind up converting our reject water from the filters over to plant 1 to get it out of our waste stream so we can get our plant back under control. The plant is coming back under control slowly, but we are having some issues with meeting our NTU limits and specifications. We did go over the limit for about 4 or 5 days in a row that the state set for us on our standard, on our specifications, but we're back down to our 2 limit now, and we continue to get better, but it's going to be a slow process as the biological treatment has to regrow because of the algae being so toxic and been so much in the facility.
So to clarify, we did not have any permit violations. There is, when we built the filters, the state put a limit on how they'd like the filter to perform. And for the first 2 months, everything was fine on that. And then we had this algae bloom occur. And at the time, we were recirculating water through the lagoons back into the plant. And that was pulling that algae into the plant. So we've since stopped that operation. But now we need to let the plant get back to normal before everything settles out. So we are meeting the limit now. We are having to add chemicals at the moment to meet that limit. We're working with the filter manufacturer, but we believe that as soon as we get the algae worked out of the system, we'll be able to go back to not having these chemicals on the system as well. But in the meantime, we're in construction with Parkson, who provided the filter, and we've been reviewing them, sending them data, and we're sending them more data tomorrow, and making sure that this operates well. One of the issues we find is we seem to have a lot of reject water, more than was predicted, so we're reviewing that item with them. And making sure that the filter is performing properly for the specifications on that. So initially it was really exciting because, you know, we weren't quite sure if there's a permit violation that occurred and some things like that, but we've checked all that out and recognized that, you know, this is kind of a growing pain thing. We just put in a brand new treatment process, and even though it works great for 2 months, you know, it takes time for things to suddenly happen, you know, and then so if suddenly something happened that hadn't happened before, you know, now we know better, you know, about what can happen, what the algae recirculating back through. But now we're here to answer your questions.
Thank you for your report, you guys. Any questions from the board?
Yeah, how do other facilities, plants take care of algae? Because I'm sure we're not the only one that have algae problems.
Yeah, usually the plants I check with know they're going to treat algae. And if they know they're going to treat algae, you know, they'll do a couple of things. They'll make the filters a little deeper, and then they'll pick a polymer to specifically target that algae. You know, so they'll pick a coagulant that's designed to go grab that algae. You know, if you have a lot of algae, they'll do pre-treatment in front. So there's a lot of plants that if they know they're gonna have tons of algae, they'll put a thing called a dissolved air flotation thickener somewhere in the process. And they run a bunch of bubbles, and the algae likes the bubbles, and then they grab it and pull it out. There are a lot of plants that plan for it to just show up out of the blue when they didn't expect it, you know, and so they were kind of the same mode we were. It's like, oh, you know, you're right, sometimes you can bring that back and you can get a lot of algae, you know, on top of you. If they know that they're dissipating, they design a process in front of the filters, or they work with chemicals and they design a deep filter bed, you know, to meet it. But, you know, we did pilot testing before we built this filter. We pilot tested for 6 months. Some of you were here for that. Not everybody was here for that. You know, we had good results on the wastewater we had here. As you said, prior to the algae coming back, we've had no problems with the filter whatsoever, without chemical operating just fine. So, you know, wastewater flock from a biological process is different than algae. Wastewater flock is a little lighter, softer, and bigger, so it's easily grabbed by the sand. Algae can be very small, very, very small, and there's thousands of species of algae. They all have different sizes to them and stuff. So even if you have algae, it can change throughout the year because as the temperature changes, you grow different species and things like that tend to happen. But generically speaking, the people that had planned for it had a process in front, or they had gone with a deeper bed and special chemicals for it, or they were like us and they didn't expect it and suddenly they had to deal with it. And they did a, you know, similar thing like how we prevent the algae from upsetting the process and things like that.
You mentioned a different polymer. Would it be wise when we think down the road? I'm assuming the polymer is like the sand that's in the bottom of the filter.
Polymer is a chemical additive that's kind of a sticky additive, and you're going to grab the algae, and you make the algae bump into each other, and they stick to each other, and you make them bigger physically. You
know, it's a powdery substance, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's liquid.
Yeah, it's liquid. You pump it in the water, and you explode it into the water, and then it makes the algae sticky. So every time they bump into each other, they glob onto each other, and then the particles are big enough for the sand to grab them, you know, kind of thing. So Bernie does have GenFinch coming out next week, he said.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have, we had jar testing done when we designed the filters, but I said, you know, it's been 3 years since we designed the filters, let's have a new jar test done. So they're coming out, And we will actually try a PAC to see how that goes. After they do some more jar testing, they'll recommend a PAC instead. Right now we're using alum, which is not bad, but you know, built for a certain purpose, but not as good on alum, not as good on algae as a PAC would be. A PAC would be a little stickier for the algae.
And one final question. We knew we had to meet this, we went from 10, whatever the nomenclature is, down to a 2. Do you think we should have tried to get down or down to that 2 before we actually met our deadline to go there?
Absolutely. You know, so we had designed the filters to give us more time to operate beforehand. So, for instance, the filters have been doing 1. You know, our limit's 2. They've been running 1, you know, for 2 months. One of the problems that you have when you bring a new process online is you just haven't run that process before in that area, you know, with your facility. And it isn't just like a car where it's always going to be exactly the same. You're talking about biological processes. We have a biological process going on in the lagoon, which is open algae. We got a biological process going on in the plant. And you have seasonal effects that affect all those processes. So you know, a lot of times it takes a little time to really know you're not going to have problems, you know, or little things that you didn't know about it until you just run it and see what happens. So unfortunately, when we bid this project, hopefully with 6 months of startup time so that we would have time to run this, learn the lessons before our permit change and that kind of thing. There were some delays in awarding the contract. There was delays from the previous manager and not starting the project. You know, so there was delays up front. We didn't start it, you know, and then there was a delay during construction that cost us a month only. So we ended up with only 2 months. It ran great for 2 months, but this is the kind of thing you discover with biological processes is something happened. It's something that was slowly built over time, so it wasn't obvious to anybody. It just kind of slowly built up. And then, bam, we hit it. Now, the good news is we don't have a permit violation. There aren't any fines. But it doesn't meet the goal set by the state how they want the filter to run. You know, eventually, when the state's going to mandate in our new permit, actually, it's already in our permit, eventually we become a Title 22 plant. When we're a Title 22 plant, our permit can discharge limits change. And we're not going to have any give anymore in that limit. We're going to have to be experienced in operating and stuff. But that's a few years out, you know, from that.
There was a 5-year period between the filters coming online and going to Title 22. And once you hit Title 22, then those standards become permit standards.
Thank you.
Other questions?
The flow that you diverted back over to plant number one, is that still there?
Or it's still going. It's the reject water coming off the filters because there's algae in the water. We're kind of separated from the process now.
Okay.
Before it was just a loop system. It would come around and around until it just wouldn't.
So you're holding it.
So originally, the reject water off the filter is dirty filter water, right? We were taking it to the lagoons, but eventually you got to bring water back out of the lagoons. Well, what happened is we got a big algae bloom. So every time we took water to the lagoon, we eventually had to bring it back. And when we brought that water back, it brought a bunch of algae with it. Yeah. You know, so going forward, we'll probably directly return the filtrate directly to the plant. That's an option in the design. Then we don't have to go to the lagoon. We'll take it directly to the plant. We may need to look at a spare pump for that pump station, make it more reliable, something like that. But in general, we don't have to go to the lagoon all the time. We were doing it and thinking it was fine, and then it wasn't.
That's where the contamination was coming from.
That's what it came down to. You know, just over time, the algae was slowly building up and no one saw it, and then bam. You know,
it was slowly going back.
It was just something that built up over a couple of months, and then suddenly we had a problem. And then, of course, it took them a couple of months to get there. It's going to take a couple of months to unwind it and get it back out of the system. And then we'll be making operational changes to make sure that we get surprised like that again.
With the climate change now in the last couple of weeks,
this all happened right at the front of January when it was really hot. And we don't normally get it that hot in January, but it was really hot right at the front of January. We're getting a lot of sun, and then we had a big algae bloom out there.
And the issue we're running into now is with the weather being the way it is, algae, since there's no sun to pull from, it kind of floats in the water, and it competes with the microorganism. So it eats the oxygen that we're producing now, so it makes our air rate run more, so because they're competing for the same oxygen.
So, Gregory, do you believe the algae bloom in any way is related to the new filter, to the upgrade that we did?
You know, it might be because the filter water, we don't denitrify right now. We nitrify, well, so we take the ammonia and we convert it to nitrate in our process biologically for our permit. We don't remove the nitrogen from our process water. That's in our permit, and that's a project that's coming. It's called the nitration filters, you know, nitration project, the nitrate project. But because we don't remove that nitrogen, when we take water regularly to the lagoons, you are feeding nitrogen, you're feeding straight fertilizer to the lagoons. So that, I think that combination, along with the unusually warm winter, showed it, the problem. The good news is we probably would have hit this problem in the summer, no matter what, because we get algae blooms out there in the summer. So kind of good news, bad news. The good news is we found out about it. It probably would have happened no matter what, because we get algae blooms in the summer out there. You know, so even if we didn't have really good warm water and had a big bloom right here in December, probably come April, we hit this problem. You know,
it'd be worse than the summer.
You know, kind of. So, but now we're warned. Now we know about it, and now they know how to modify the process. You know, all the piping's in there to do different things with it. They can go out different places with it. Now they kind of learned the lesson, and we can organize it. And we'll be working with Parkson to make sure we're back on spec and operating properly. You know, as we go forward.
So do you believe you have a fix now, or do you have to look at additional?
Well, we're back under two now. We're meeting the permit now and the permit guidelines now. I think we have a fix now, but I'm not gonna. I think we have a fix now, which is to generically stop going to the ponds all the time. We may need to put some reliability into the decant pump station at that point. You know, so there may be way to buy our pump, make sure we got enough. You know, to handle that process going there all the time in a new direction. But I want to watch it. You know, I mean, I don't want to just say, oh yeah, it's all solved, don't worry. We think we've got a good plan, but we want to implement that plan and then monitor it and make sure we're doing that.
How long do we have to continue to use the alum?
At the moment, we're still using alum. The
obviously, we don't want that to go on indefinitely.
Right. At the moment.
Right now, we have to use it because we can't meet the NTU without it. So until we start seeing a full process come back alive,
one of the things is
another week,
we're not quite, we're not settling the way we used to in the clarifiers. So we have more load coming off the clarifiers, which are in front of the filter, than we used to. And I think we're probably going to end up using alum until those clarifiers and the plant calms back down and goes back to how it normally operates. You know,
everything gets back in balance.
It's probably another, I would expect another month at least until the biology is all back to how it was before the algae got introduced and we're settling like we settle properly. And we get back to there, I think we'll be back to
where we get off. We have about a 20 to 22 day mixed liquor. Uses how long it stays in the system. So we're looking about another week and a half. Hopefully we'll see some dramatic turnaround.
Any other questions from the board? This was an agendized item. I think we have to go to the public. Does the public have any comments with regards to the staff report? Okay. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate the update. Bernie, you might as well stay up there because you're up next with the Veolia report.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So back to December. We continue our safe practices. We celebrated our ninth year of work in safe practice, no incidents in 9 years. Continue our training. All reports were submitted on time. Water production 47 million gallons for the month of December. We had a reduction around 29%. We ended up about 33% overall, 32% from 2013. So we're doing really good with our water reduction savings. Hypo fluctuate with the use of with the water demand. Month of December, you see we're well on parameters. Flow normal 1.3. BLDs are low. We did have one BLD there. You see the star that was way out of range when they ran it. It was an anomaly, so we had to discard it. But everything else you can see are back T's there. Our water's almost crystal clear coming off the clarifiers through the filters. So things were running well in December. All lift stations are running well. We did have a minor spill or SSO there in December at our force main vortex box, which is located at the golf station. I'll show you a picture of that, how that works.
We finished our assessment of the sewer lines. Staff continues to do a great job on keeping backlog, work orders to a minimum, backlog to a minimum. Callouts are minimal. Things continue to improve. Here, this is the box. There's a box over at the golf station where the force main ends, and at the where it comes in, it goes into a vortex. It goes in, and the water bubbles out. Well, there's brackets in there, so for the last 14 years, a big rag ball had been building up inside it. And every time it would come out, water would squirt out, a little hole here. So we was able to pull that lid off. We removed all the rags, cleaned up all the mess, and so we now we have that on the annual PM, because before we didn't know the lid would come off.
Is that the rag ball right there?
Yeah, it's a huge rag ball.
It's gross.
Bigger than the ball.
And then and when we did that, we did find some entities right behind it, had some issues, and we're getting that repaired as we speak, so that we take care of everything. Other than that, it's going well in December.
Thank you, Bernie. Other comments from the public? Oh, Virgil, would you like
to? Hey, just comment. The rags, primarily, it's an issue among all wastewater districts. Primarily, you hear the terminology called diaper wipes, because they're so fibrous in there, they do not break down like tissue does in the wastewater. So in the part of town where we have the younger families, we're having a lot more of that. So that, but it's an issue all across the U.S., not just Discovery Bay.
So is there a way to monitor that?
We're trying to find ways, work with manufacturers to run it through grinders, so it's really small,
yeah. And
not just the whole sheet. And it's an issue.
I remember you talking about that 10 years ago.
Yeah, the biggest issue is this guy says flushable, don't mean it's flushable.
Correct. Yeah.
any questions from the public with regards to Bernie's report? Yes, Phil.
You want to look to
the
regards
Phil?
To, oh, I'm sorry.
Is this a question for Bernie?
Just the whole the diaper wipe rag ball
okay. Comment.
Is this a situation, and we mentioned it's more prevalent with the newer families that have little kids. I'm assuming that's where these fibers are coming from. It's a matter of some education. Hey, even though it says flushable, you know, throw those away. They, you know, clog up our wastewater system. That was my comment. And
thank you for that.
You can address that.
Appreciate that, Phil. Paul, it would be beneficial if everybody would just wrap them up in the diaper and throw them away, but I don't know how to necessarily get the word out, so I appreciate that.
Send it in our water bill.
Yeah. There you go.
As an educational piece, absolutely. In our trifold, we could actually do a staff, if you make note of that we might be able to include something with regards to that. And it's not exclusive to younger families either. It's something to consider for our newsletter or for our publication, and also put on the website. Any other comments, questions from the board? Thank you, Bernie. Appreciate that. Okay, item G. Staff, item one.
Okay, in June of last year, this board sent a letter to Supervisor Burgess's office expressing concerns with the negative impacts caused by short-term vacation rentals and asking questions about the county's transient occupancy tax. We didn't get a reply. However, on January 5th of this year, Leah, who's out in the audience, I think was aware of this. So she sent me an email that had gone out to the to various agencies that had a questionnaire asking for input on the regulation of short-term rentals and the transient occupancy tax. We had not gotten this questionnaire in the past, but with Leah's help, we now have that questionnaire before us. Staff completed some recommended comments on that questionnaire for forwarding back to the county. And so those are there for you to examine. We can edit them or we can submit them the way they are. And additionally, Supervisor Burgess is hosting a first District 3 All-MAC meeting to be held in Bethel Island on January 31st at 6 p.m. And a topic up for discussion and input is this county's consideration of a short-term rental ordinance. With this board's authorization, myself and or a board member could attend this meeting to provide input on this issue on behalf of the board. And that concludes my report.
Any comment from the public? Hearing none. Before I go to the board, I just want to recognize Leah is back with us representing Supervisor Burgess' office. She did this for us before. She's a resident out here in Discovery Bay, and we are very happy to have you back. Thank you for being here. Any questions from the board?
Yeah, I kind of scratching my head a little bit on how the county plans on collecting this tax. It sounds like it's a turn yourself in and here's my tax money. I don't know how they're going to do it.
I think this is what's being explored. All the variations are what's being explored by the county, and that's why they're seeking input. There's different ways to do it. From my research, one is this can be the tax can be paid directly by the owner to the county if that's the setup, or a setup can be made with the short-term rental institutions that facilitate these. And so when they do the booking, they would automatically send the tax to the county.
Well, the other thing that came to my attention, and in the country club, I live there, and I just heard this, they're probably doing it everywhere. They're doing Airbnb rentals online. So I'm not sure how those people are going to apply. So that's something whoever goes from here might want to discuss that, too.
I'm sorry, that was all.
Didn't read enough.
I think it would be important, number one, for the for this town of Discovery Bay to be represented at that meeting, and I would hope that we have one or more people that would be there to represent our interests you want people to have the ability to use their properties, and that's fine, but we also have the issue of those who abuse those properties and abuse those issues, and so I would hope that at the meeting on the 31st that we bring forward the issues that are involved with it. It's not a big technical issue, I don't think, to collect the money. It's just a matter of having the wherewithal to do it. The impacts are definitely right here in the town of Discovery Bay, and it would be nice to see those monies come back in terms of regulation and enforcement, and make sure that the town of Discovery Bay is well represented and gets a benefit out of this discussion.
Yeah, and generally, with regards to your comments, Director Lee, in the past, Supervisor PIFO had regular all-MAC meetings where the entire board was, because when we were made a district as community service district, we were also continued to give MAC responsibilities to the supervisor, even though, so we are a combination MAC CSD. We have an obligation to be there to represent and also to interact with our neighbors and that are around us. So I agree 100%. The only problem I have is that I'm seeing the 31st, but no time determined as to what time.
6 o'clock. 6 p.m. But we don't have an exact location.
That's not a problem as long as time. So I would be available to go to that meeting, and I would welcome anybody else on the board that would like to go.
All right, I'll be there.
Okay. So.
General manager, Director Graves and Director Steele.
Okay,
perfect.
Okay. Does that need to be a motion?
Yes.
And approval to send this questionnaire in as well.
I will make that motion.
Including
as the questionnaire, general manager, director, or President Graves, Director
Steele. I'll second that.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Thank you. We will bring back a report. Item number two, discussion of possible action regarding Stantec's proposal. Staff, please.
This item is before you to consider approval of Stantec's proposal for an operation and maintenance manual for the town's wastewater treatment plants. The current manual is an outdated draft version. The proposal provides for the development of the manual and an online interactive version for a total of $180,000, with an option for local interactive online manual hosting and linking SCADA system programming at an additional $14,000. I'll turn this over to our town engineer, Gregory Harris, for additional information.
Good afternoon again, gentlemen.
The principal's feedback. Why isn't he here?
he's not here because no one asked him. So when I was told, hey, can you get an update on the item manual, I thought it was just me. So I didn't ask to be here.
Well, I got a bunch of questions.
Just I did send an email. It was addressed to you and Steve.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Yes. And
so that was confusion on my part because Steve asked me and I said, oh, no, I think they just want me to talk over and catch up again. But I am very familiar with it, but hopefully
you can't answer the questions I want to ask.
Okay.
Regardless of your expertise as an engineer.
Yeah. Steve is not here because I did not ask him here. That was my confusion as to this presentation. So I apologize for that.
Go ahead with your presentation. We'll go ahead with your presentation and we'll discuss any further action if we need.
All right, so in the wastewater committee meetings, we have been kicking around that we need to get, you know, an end manual for plant one and plant two. And so I'm here to give you a little presentation. It is essentially StanTech's presentation with a little extra information thrown in that I threw into them. But this is a copy of the presentation given to the wastewater committee by StanTech last month. And I've added a little additional information to answer some specific things to the proposal. And so I'll walk you through that and then give you technical information and then we can talk, you know, next steps from there. If you want to bring StanTech back, we can be sure that we'll come back and discuss that. Okay. So, actually, can you go forward?
Probably not.
Is it on?
Okay, so just a quick update, you know, on why we have an ONMAL. So here's a quick agenda for what we're going to talk about, and this will be 10 minutes. I'm not going to kill this, all right? So this is 10 minutes. I'm going to discuss, you know, why do we have an ONMAL? What's a basic ONMAL versus an interactive ONMAL, which we'll discuss. Some interactive ONMAL features, and then there were some optional items in the proposal. Talked about local hosting and SCADA programming links. I'll describe what that is so people can understand essentially what's in the proposal. So the important thing is you have an NPDES requirement to have an ONMAL. That's part of your permit. You have an ONMAL that I wrote 10 years ago as a draft, and nothing ever happened to it since. There's never been an update. There was no input back. And Southwest Water ran a plan at the time. There was no input back from them. It's just something that's just kind of been floating along. It's done a pretty good job, right? But it's really outdated since that's a 2007 manual. We've done a lot of work on the plan since then, including the filtration project we just brought up. In addition, a Title 22 plant also has to have an ONM manual with specific addresses, the filtration process and stuff when you go to Pulse Out 22. So the reality is it's time to update the ONM manual because the plan is a lot different than when the ONM manual was written. And in addition to the permit requirements, you know, it's a training for the operation staff. You know, you need a method to train them. You need a method to pass on. Now, often operators move on. You know, you need a mechanism to hand over information when operators move on, so new people come in and have a method of getting organized and understanding the plan. And then, so it's good for training the plant staff, and as well as useful for planning your maintenance that is going to occur. So it's not if we need an ONM manual, you have to have an ONM manual, it's a requirement. Now, that being said, there's different levels of ONM manual, right? So you can have meet the permit requirement, keep the regulators off your back, but nothing else, or you can embellish that and try and make something more useful out of it, which is what we're going to talk about today. All right, so a basic ONM manual, which is what we started with. That's what we actually started with when we contacted StanTech, is we need a basic ONM manual. And in that ONM manual, there's 23 chapters for all the different pieces of a treatment plant and a lift station. So there's a lot of information. Like the headworks gets its own chapter, secondary process gets its own chapter, the filter would get its own chapter, you know. And each one of those chapters would be a purpose, the relationship to other equipment, how does it operate, controls and instrumentation, how do you monitor it, how do you start up and shut it down, and what are problems you might encounter. So like a good example is the filter. What are problems you might encounter? Hey, you bring too much algae back in the plant, you're going to have a problem. And that's the kind of information that can go into an ONM manual, especially if there's things that we've already encountered that's unique to this plant, that is good information to put in the manuals, because that gets transferred. You know, that goes on to the next generation of operators and things that come along. So that basic O&M manual, 23 chapters, is about that thick. We print it all out, you know, because we had examples. We had two binders, so 2 3-inch binders. That's your O&M manual. That's your basic O&M manual. Every one of those chapters gets that kind of information put into it. The task effort is to gather all that information, you know. You got to go gather it. You got to put drawings in it, make it meaningful, work with the operator, get comments back, you know, put out a decent manual. That effort is what we're calling the basic O&M manual, okay? And that's what we started with. That's what we started with. We started with a budget of about $180,000 for that. But then people started asking questions like, well, hey, is that a good price? What else might we do? This and that. So we went back and we started looking around and said, what other things are we can do? And really, the price of the manual is based upon what do you want to put into it. You know, you can pay more, you can pay less. It really depends on what you want to get into it. And that's when we started a discussion with Stantec about, well, what else could we do? What do we want to put into it? And they brought up another feature, which they're going to call their interactive O&M manual. So instead of a static book, instead of a book that you know to turn the pages on, or even a PDF file that you can scroll through, an interactive O&M manual is web-based. And so it is a web portal to the information. So rather than having chapters, all that same information is built on the web, but because it's built on the web, you can add anything you want to it and just link it up. You know, you don't have to keep trying to print a manual and change the wording and things like that. So we have an IONM. It's called the IONM Interactive O&M Manual. So you can access it from anywhere that you have an internet connection. So that includes mobile devices and tablets and things like that. You log in on the web. You literally go to your web browser. You go to this web page. You get a login. Your manual shows up. This is your opening screen on your manual. So does that have a pointer?
No.
It doesn't work on the TV.
Oh, okay. At any rate, this is an example of an existing interactive O&M manual for City of Merced. And you can see that they log in. This is a screen that comes up. So now what's different about that is, you see all the colored boxes there? Those are all treatment processes. Every single color and every number is a different treatment process. So instead of going to a table of contents, like if you're an operator and you want to know about the headworks, instead of going to table of contents, looking up headworks, find out what chapter it is, go to that chapter and get there, you look at the picture of your plant that you know because you walk this every day, and you say, ah, I'm standing right here, and you click there. And then when you click there, you know, we go on to a drawing pops up. Okay, now this drawing would be in either manual. This drawing that you see here, this kind of graphic is necessary whether it's a handwritten manual or whether it's a web-based manual. But rather than go find this manual, you know, manually, boom, you clicked on the process, and boom, your process shows up, your specific process shows up. And from here, again, it's graphic-based. You can click on different pieces of equipment, and boom, you zoom in on a pump. Then you can click on that pump, and bam, it takes you to this text section that relates to that pump, you know. And so you can see for an operator in the field, instead of dragging, I mean, if you were to carry the O&M manual with you, every, like if you had it in the truck, let's say, okay, you know, all right, I'm out here and I'm a little, you know, I'm not familiar with this process, I need to figure this out. Drag out the O&M manual, you know, dig through. And you can see that a lot of people aren't really text-based people anymore. I mean, operators are younger kids nowadays. They're coming out and getting in the process. They're graphically oriented people. They're not, you know, book-based people. But the biggest drawback to the book-based thing is how do we add information to it? What makes it a convenient method to add information to it? We have a 10-year-old man that we've never added information to. All right, it's a 10-year-old draft. We've never added information to it. So the when you think of it as a web portal, now you recognize that an operator can add information at any time. So for instance, if you look at the bottom of the screen, there's a note from D. Gregory. This is set up to where an operator can just type a note. He can literally just log right in, and bam, 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 I have an issue. There's something to watch out for here, and he just types his note in. So it's set up for the operator to interact with it. That's why it's called interactive on M. Okay? And then if you want to load a photo, take a photo of the process, and operators can just load it up. So I have a problem, or hey, here's a tricky valve that looked like a problem, or we solved some problem, take a picture of it. load it up. Boom, there it is. Then you can put an operator description on the bottom. So you can load photos up